Following was on Bud Guest program Thursday and Friday, May 7th and 8th, 1964.
Now it happened that Mr. Delamater's father was one of the community who had petitioned for better postal service after moving to Sheboygan County in 1903. And when the petition was granted, he became the postmaster. Nobody else seemed to want the job. And so the post office became part of the log house the Delamater family occupied. Now, Bud, says Mr. Delamater, this was not a first-class post office in more ways than one. The regular service called for the mail to leave at 1 p.m. and return at 5 p.m. every Tuesday and Saturday. This was not a money-order post office, but it did handle registered mail, used mostly for sending money in those days. A writing desk served as the post office in our log house, which was a one-room house with a two-room lean-to on one side, which was built of lumber. There was an upstairs, which was three logs high on the sides where we boys slept. We could get to it either by an outside stairway or an inside ladder, which was built against the wall. Blankets were hung in the log part to separate the bedroom from the living room and the post office. This log house was built on the side of a hill, leaning down the hill, with a prop at the front corner. We were told that the men who had built that log house slept in it while it was under construction, and one night they heard a terrifying noise. They got up to investigate and found that the cabin had racked over about 10 inches, so they hastily braced it with a cedar log. Even though this was a moonlighting job, that prop supported the house at least 20 years after we moved there, and also served as a hitching post on occasion. When the little mail we had could easily have been carried in the carrier's pocket most days, it had to be carried in a regular-sized mail pouch and locked to meet postal regulations. Now, this pouch was made of light brown leather, says Mr. Delamater, and the same pouch was used for at least 10 years, until our carrier came back one afternoon with a canvas one in its place. He simply explained to my father that it was regulations, and we never did find out what happened to the leather one. Notice, Bud, that I called him the carrier, says Mr. Delamater. That is exactly what he was. He carried the mail on foot, 6 miles each way, winter and summer. This same man, Mr. Miller, carried the mail from the beginning of the year in 1904 until about 1918, as I remember, and he failed to complete the round on the same day only once. And that was during a very bad snowstorm in February 1911, when he finally did arrive the following forenoon, and the postmaster, my dad, learned that Mr. Miller had kept the mail in his own house the night before. He proceeded to read him the riot act from the official manual of postal regulations, all about how neither snow nor wind nor hail, and all that stuff, and how the mail must always go through. Many times during the winter, we would see Mr. Miller come in with the mail and pick the icicles from his heavy brown mustache. And now that it's been some 55 years since this happened, maybe it will be all right if I tell you about the time a registered letter came for one of the neighbors of Mr. Miller, the mail carrier. My father asked Mr. Miller if he would please tell his neighbor about this registered letter, as it had to be delivered to the person to whom it was addressed, and he had to sign a card indicating that he had received it. When the neighbor heard that he had a registered letter waiting for him, he didn't wait for any elaborate ceremony. He came busting right over to the post office. He could hardly wait to find out who was sending him money. But it was a letdown for the poor fellow. Instead of money, the registered letter contained a warning about seeing that his boy was in school every day, or else, and it was signed by the truant officer. Now I think we'd better save the rest of Mr. Delamater's report on the exciting life in the Dow, Michigan post office for tomorrow. It's a good time, I think, Charlie, to conclude Mr. Charles Delamater's narrative, which we began yesterday, of the exciting life in the one-room log post office at Dow, Michigan, in the very early 1900s. Now, we have told how this post office stood right smack on the west lane of I-75, about 8 miles south of the Mackinac Bridge, how Mr. Delamater's father was the first postmaster, and how Mr. Miller, the carrier, walked his route in fair weather and foul. Now, the log house stood as the Dow Post Office for about 2 years, Mr. Delamater says, when we moved into our new frame house atop the hill in December 1906. That's the house you can still see standing today. And the log house became a stable. Now, the post office, which consisted of a writing desk, you may remember, was in one corner of a room which was our kitchen and dining room. Those were the good old days we keep hearing about, Bud, says Mr. Delamater, as we had mail delivered right to our door, actually right nearly to our kitchen table, and twice a week at that. Occasionally, mail would come to us addressed to the Dow Chemical Company, but we had never heard of that company, and it wasn't until some years later that we learned that the Dow Chemical Company was located at Midland, Michigan, not at Dow, Michigan. And the postmaster at Dorr, Michigan, D-O-R-R, in Allegan County, a Mr. Botsford, probably didn't appreciate the post office at Dow very much either, as the W in Dow was often mistaken for the two R's in Dorr, and vice versa, and caused a mix-up in the mail at times. One summer day, Bud, in 1905 or 6, a stranger showed up in our community. He was about 30 years old, and he stayed with a neighbor about a mile from our place, says Mr. Delamater. No, there wasn't any law against strangers, but he was there without being invited and seemingly without purpose. He just wandered around with nothing to do and all day long to do it in. One day I saw him coming up the road, idly tossing a ball in the air and catching it, just killing time, it seemed. By his actions and by some of the things he was overheard to say, the residents became suspicious of him and decided that here was a guy that was up to no good. My father became alarmed, thinking that he might be intending to rob the post office. He'd been in a few times, asking questions and saying things that sounded suspicious, and we figured he was probably casing the place. Our post office would have been easy pickings, Bud, and he might have had a haul as much as $10 in stamps and change. My father, realizing his great responsibility as the postmaster, wasn't taking any chances. He loaded his revolver, and he had it handy, something he very seldom did. And he announced that he was going to lock the door. Now, this was a log house, remember, Bud? And while we had lived there over 2 years, the door had never been locked. But, said my father, it must be locked that night. But he couldn't find the key, so he nailed the door shut. I suppose that would be called maximum security, says Mr. Delamater. Nothing happened during the night. My father had the nails pulled out and the door opened for business the next morning as usual. The young fellow disappeared shortly after that as mysteriously as he had appeared. We guessed maybe that he was some crook from the big city, hiding out from a bank job or something. I tell you, Bud, life had its exciting moments in that little community, says Mr. Delamater. Some years later, we had a poster on the post office wall picturing and describing a horse and buggy that had been stolen from the county surveyor. Now, the road by our house had been closed for some time, with a gate just beyond the house as the road wound through the woods. One afternoon, I saw a horse and buggy drive by the house and stop at that gate. Two men got out and tied the horse and walked through the gate and up the old road a short distance, then came back, turned the horse around, and drove back the way they had come. This indicated to me that they were not familiar with the area. So I told the folks about it that night, and my father quickly asked, did the horse and buggy look like the one we have on the post office wall? I agreed it did resemble it, and so by 4 o'clock the next morning, my father and I had our chores completed and were on the trail of the horse and buggy. We stopped and asked all along the road to Sheboygan whether anyone had seen this horse and buggy, and they all reported they had. So when we got to town, we told the sheriff about it. But that was the last we ever heard about it, Bud. If any of your members know anything about that horse being stolen in Kent County, I wish they would let me know. I'd kind of like to know how the story came out. But by jingoes, so would I.